Good afternoon, everyone. The Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue is open. We're going to start off a public hearing. We're going to get into this really pretty basic, straightforward bail on guilt. I don't know we need to discuss it much, but let me open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 851. And Kate, if you could give us just sort of overview, speaking to us with big picture, 3,000-foot level. Maybe we can go higher than that before we get down. Before we get down into it.
Outer space would be fine.
Absolutely. So Chair Haas, members of the committee, Senate Bill 851 deals with what is referred to as GILTI. This is global intangible low-taxed income. We are still working on the paperwork. There are amendments and progress as we speak, and so the language in the bill will likely change. And the purpose of today, at least from my presentation perspective, is to provide just this high-level overview of kind of where we are and what ambiguity exists. And so to that end, I've prepared a one-pager that's available in OLIS. And again, the goal here is just to provide you kind of an update of where we are. So as a reminder, what are we talking about when we hear the phrase GILTI? This stands for Global Intangible Low-Taxed Income. Keep in the back of your mind, this does not have to be intangible, nor does it have to be low-taxed in terms of the calculation. The calculation is very complex, and so that isn't something I plan to get into today, but sometimes the name can be misleading about the scope of this category. This is a reoccurring tax on high return income earned by controlled foreign corporations. The last time we discussed this bill, there were lots of questions about how is this different from the transition tax that was dealt with before. That was a one-time repatriation. This is an ongoing, a reoccurring tax on this income. At the federal level, this is eligible for a 50% federal deduction. That's referred to as FDII, F-D-I-I, if you've heard that term before. Also at the federal level, this income is eligible for a credit of 80% of taxes paid to foreign governments. So there's this foreign tax credit component. And note that because that's at the federal level and it deals with foreign governments, states typically do not recognize that type of tax credit. And in general, it's treated similar to subpart F income at the federal level, but is not by definition subpart F income. And this is where a lot of the confusion around this occurs. So that's a very brief high-level overview of what we're talking about. What are the problems here that potentially need solved? So right now, it's unclear how Oregon will treat GILTI for tax purposes. And so providing some clarity is something that stakeholders have asked for or testified about. It's unclear whether this will be treated as part of federal taxable income or as a deemed dividend. And then if so, there's this potential for a double deduction. There could also be litigation concerns surrounding the different options for how Oregon might treat this. And that's something that I've reached out to LC about and potentially will be addressed depending on what policy choices you make. So I believe there are kind of four broad policy options in no particular order. The first one is if there's no new legislation, then as in current operations, this GILTI, so this type of income, would show up in federal taxable income and not in the apportionment percentage. And if this occurred, then DOR would probably use rulemaking to address the uncertainty. And some states have taken this approach and providing guidance from their departments of revenue. Second option, to allow GILTI to show up in federal taxable income, so kind of like option one, but we clarify, within statute, clarify whether this should be included in the denominator of our apportionment percentage. And this is an issue that cost and a number of tax policy advocates have discussed, that if it's going to show up in federal taxable income, then potentially there's this need to give it factor representation, so including it in the apportionment percentage. The third option is to clarify, and again, these are policy choices. So one choice you could make is to say that GILTI, Oregon will treat GILTI similar to subpart F income and will not allow a double deduction. And I believe that's similar to the approach that was taken last session with the transition tax. And then the fourth option is to decouple from this type of income entirely and not include it in the tax base in any way. And so that's all I have for that sheet.
Okay. Did you have a map that you wanted us
to Sure. Yes. Chair Haas, members of the committee. This map was actually uploaded by Nikki DeBay when she testified the last time we discussed guilty. There are a number of maps out there from different sources, not just from COST, but this gives you an idea for how states are responding to these new provisions, which states have responded, in what ways. As I mentioned, some states are allowing their Department of Revenue to make rulemaking or guidance. Other states are enacting legislation. Some of those states are treating this as a deemed dividend and going down that path. Other states are including it in their apportionment percentage. So there's a variety of responses here, but this map gives you an idea of kind of the distribution across states.
Okay, and you say we have an amendment, but it's not up on all of us.
Yes.
It's not, okay.
We haven't received it yet.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Questions of Kate on this update? Senator Benz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it seemed to me that one of the first questions we had to ask, and you can put this in context for us, I hope, is whether we wanted to continue our reach beyond the water's edge or not. Because as I was going through the materials here, it seemed to me that we could make a list of policy calls that we need to make in order to reach a conclusion to the questions you've asked, in order to choose that alternative. And that would be one of the first ones I would put down. And I know that we've had discussions at length about tax haven countries and trying to include a portion of that which we view as being hidden from the reach of our taxes. And there's always been that issue of whether we were going to reach beyond. So my question to you would be, should we?
So Chair Haas, Senator Benz, I would say that some of these options allow you to effectively do so. So if treated as a deemed dividend and then given this deduction or some sort of deduction, that income is effectively not taxed or only a small portion of it is taxed by the state. That's my current understanding. Now, if guilty shows up in federal taxable income and in the apportionment percentage, now the denominator of that percentage, which we think of as everywhere sales, to your point of water's edge, now it would include things beyond the water's edge. And so if we gave guilty that factor representation, then that would effectively be a policy choice that reached beyond.
Right. And you follow up, Mr. Chair? So the question, as I saw it, was to pull away from the specifics for a moment and ask about the impact on the state of Oregon should we decide to do exactly that. In other words, what happens to our reputation as a tax or non-tax state should we decide we want to go beyond the water's edge and include some of that income as a part of that which we tax. And we could go through the apportionment and all that. I don't want to do that. I want to just ask the question of whoever we might ask it of, do we want to do this because perhaps corporations that work within Oregon will be less enthusiastic about doing so? Mm-hmm. So that'd be one way of getting to a conclusion by just seeing how it's going to play in front of those groups. So that's my question. How is it going to play in front of, if we decide to go beyond water's edge and begin to include this income that now has been handed to us by virtue of our reconnecting, what happens to our whatever's left of our reputation regarding being kind to business?
Right. So, Chair Haas. Oh,
sorry.
Senator Benz.
I slipped into policy.
So, one thing I would mention that comes up with this potential policy decision. So if we go down this path of including this income, which some states have done, a number of kind of tax practitioners have brought up that maybe this is an overreach and there could be legal issues. And so that's something I've reached out to LC to try to get a better feel for case law and whether this would create some legal issues for the state. So that's kind of one piece that I think is important to consider here. Other states have done have made that policy decision, and I could look into more about kind of what the response has been since that has been made. But because this is so new, it's difficult to know the effect on reputation immediately. However, I would say that the fact that there is this potential concern of overreach or litigation, that that alone could, in theory, affect reputation for business friendliness.
Right.
But I can do some additional work to try to understand how it affected other states that made this decision.
And I noticed in this article that was in the materials that they do go into the constitutional issues and all of that.
Yes.
So we'll wait for LC to follow up, Mr. Chair.
Senator Benz.
So I was talking to Senator Beyer about this, and he indicated that it was his recollection that during the Atiyah administration, Governor Atiyah had done his best to establish the water edge approach to try to make Oregon more business friendly. And it would be interesting to see if that thinking is applicable to today's decision.
Okay.
Which I think is the same, same question I asked earlier, which is how will business perceive this?
Okay.
And yeah.
Kate, the amendment that is in the works, which one of those four policy options is it following?
So, Chair Haas, the amendment that's in the works, I think, is largely trying to clear up language issues without taking a policy stance, since that's a committee decision. So I believe the goal or the intent of the bill as it stands is to say, if it's treated as a deemed dividend, do not allow a double deduction. But it doesn't make it explicit whether we're treating it one way or another.
Okay. On your map here, I see some states have a percentage coupled to 10% to 30%. What does that do?
Yeah. Chair Haas, members of the committee. So in the cases of partial coupling, and without knowing the specifics of each state, so one example of how this could play out in Oregon is if we allow this as a deemed dividend or treat it as such, and then we would only be taxing a portion of the income. So if we say GILTI income can be included in our tax base, but we will give a dividends received deduction of 80%, then we would only be effectively taxing 20% if that was written correctly. So I don't know the specifics of those three states, and I can look into them more, but that's one situation where we would end up with this percentage coupling, but not full coupling.
Okay. Senator Bocas?
I guess two questions for staff, just to understand. And I guess I'll preface it first, because you weren't here when we started down this road. But we did have discussions on GILTI and on the repatriation funds with fairly significant stakeholders in the state of Oregon. And none of them seem to have an interpretation problem of GILTI or not GILTI. Some of us think they're GILTI of things, but nothing to do with this. In your mind, if we did something different than what we're doing today, and I note the map has us as coupled somehow with red on here, if we uncoupled with it at 100%, is there any rough order of magnitude of a financial or of a revenue impact? Is there, are we talking about uncoupling suddenly generates $20 million in new taxes because there's people out there who have this money? Or is it pretty much we don't know?
So Chair Haas, Senator Boquist, I would say at this point, I don't know. I can work on that a little bit more. Because this is so new, it's difficult. That's one of the reasons it's difficult to make this estimate. Uncoupling would mean that we exclude this income entirely. And so that would not have any type of revenue gain at a face level. But I can look into that more. I will say that from most, if not all, of what I read, there is an interpretation issue of how GILTI is treated. And so I've heard arguments made that in the absence of legislation that's clear on which way we're treating it, taxpayers will just choose whatever is most beneficial to them, meaning the lowest tax liability. And so I think as is, if it's not clear and in the absence of any rulemaking from DOR, there would be this kind of potential for two different interpretations.
Senator Bocas.
I'd be happy to have a follow-up from you, not on the blue tape over here, but I'd be most interested, because we face this problem on several issues of the repatriation, which everybody claims their interpretation. But as you can see,
you can see and the public cannot see, the likely suspects are all here in the crowd, and nobody who'd be impacted by this is sitting in the room. And so I'm wondering, do the people who are impacted this really think they're impacted by this? And so who is sort of this group of people who are concerned? Many times, unfortunately, we do fixes in this committee because we perceive somebody had a perception of a problem, and then we go back and fix it again because our perception was wrong. And so you made mention of, and I read the cost memo, and it wasn't that helpful either. But so if we could maybe get back some, okay, who are the concerned parties? And obviously, if they're concerned, we're interested in why they're concerned, because there may be, you know, I don't know, $100 million of extra revenue out there that they should be right. paying us. But
I can absolutely follow
thanks,
up on that.
Appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Benz.
Thank you, Mr. And continuing Senator Bookwith's questions and looking at the cost memo, they do say, I think it's kind of a confusing memo because they go back and forth, but to make the point that businesses might choose, but it says that Oregon, it says, as a result, all of taxpayers' guilty income from both low and taxed and high tax countries would be subject to Oregon's corporate income tax, so unless we decouple. And so I think that was the question, how much would that be? What kind of number is that? That the cost memo suggests that there is no compelling tax policy for the state because it's not part of the basis now. But I think it kind of might partially be, because I can't remember what our story, our position was on the tax
havens.
Yeah. And I there's something I read in here that said we got away from that, but I didn't think we did. I thought there was still a tax, I think there was a blacklist still, wasn't there?
I think we
did away with it.
No, there's no blacklist.
That was part of
we blacked out the blacklist.
We cut away from
that. That's what I couldn't remember. Yeah. But then, indeed, I read that indeed was what had happened, that we didn't have that list anymore.
Correct.
Therefore, the cost memo's assertion that we don't have any tax policy to protect by suddenly going, wow, we just fell into all of this money. And their argument is you should decouple, and thus, because you don't have a compelling tax policy. Well, that seems to me to be the question, isn't it? What would be the reason to be taxing offshore income? And that takes us back to, what was the thinking at the time we decided not to, back in Atiyah's day, if that's when that decision was made?
Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Hess. So going back to the map here, and maybe Senator Hess, you asked this and maybe I missed it. So looking at this, and usually one, especially when it comes to tax policy, you see some sort of pattern where states with, shall we say, similar values kind of line up. And this map is very, very confusing to me. What does the blank mean, the four states that are blank?
So, Chair Hass, Senator Taylor, the blank states, off the top of my head, I believe, do not have a corporate income tax. So you think of Washington with the B&O tax, not technically a corporate income tax, or Ohio with the CAT, not technically a corporate income tax.
Okay. So I hope we're not asking you to memorize all 50 states' tax policies, but it seems like we're, so I'm about to ask you a question so I don't expect you to actually truly know, and I don't want to create a lot of work here, but I really don't. But when I'm looking at this, I'm sorry, follow up?
Senator Taylor.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. And I'm going to make a wild guess that these 50 states have made decisions on a set of variables that I'm quite confident, I mean, I do not know what all those variables are, okay? So the driving factors. So, you know, why Michigan is decoupled and what has happened in Montana with 20%, and then we have Texas and we have these different decisions. They're not all starting, obviously, from the same point. And you just explained why these four states they're blank and they don't have a corporate income tax, so they have this different foundation for what they're making a decision on. And what I don't know is which of the other states are we the most comparable to is if this didn't exist, right? Like just what the, because I thought that it's my understanding that Oregon, we like to be different. And I have said somewhat jokingly, but not really jokingly, no other state seems to want to be like us tax-wise. So what are the what I'm trying to understand is, in the decisions that we're contemplating here, what our base is, and the other states, I don't know how to get to that answer without someone doing an enormous amount of work, unless this Council on State Taxation already has the information about, like, all the green states. Like, what do they have in play that's causing them to be remain green? You know, they're still decoupled. So what is going on in all the green states? Is there something that they all have in common that they're making that decision based on? Is this like sales tax or some other variable? So that's the part. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. That might be the SEC, and we're more on the Pac-10. Can I look at the green? Sorry.
Yeah, and then finally, one other question, please, Senator Haas.
Senator Taylor.
Thank you. So this blue issue, potentially coupled to guilty, but inclusion is likely constitutionally prohibited in separate reporting states. Now, because we were talking about their state constitutions?
So, Chair Haas, Senator Taylor. To the last question, no, I believe they're referencing the U.S. Constitution. And I haven't gone, because we're not a separate reporting state, I don't know all the details here. But my understanding is, as of right now, if in a separate reporting state, every business files an individual tax return, whereas in Oregon, for example, we have these unitary groups. Right. So if all of these are separate from one another, then they can, and I'm not sure, again, this is off the top of my head. Then the CFC would effectively, I believe, file separately, and so they wouldn't have nexus in New Mexico, in this example, perhaps. And so that gets into this ish, the potential litigation that I've reached out to LC about whether this violates U.S. Constitution clauses. And the article that Senator Benz referenced that Cost, I think, provided before, the argument is made that in some cases there's potential for constitutional litigation related to this issue. So that's one thing that I would say to your question. So two other things. Remember that this map is, I'm not sure the dates on there, I believe this is from early 2019, but states are changing, are trying to respond to this kind of quickly. And so in 10 years from now, when states have decided and had time to reflect on what they might do, this map might more accurately reflect the values or the patterns that you expected to see. Mm-hmm. But I think in a lot of cases, there's a potential for a revenue loss or revenue gain, so states are trying to act quickly. And the third thing I would mention is that, so in Oregon, for example, we're a red state according to this map, which means we're coupled or partially coupled, but we haven't actually taken any action to be coupled or partially coupled. It's just a function of our rolling reconnect. And so when in the other states, it's not necessarily that Nevada chose to be a white state or that Texas chose to be yellow in this case. It might be, just like in Oregon, a function of where they were before the legislation is enacted and how they are connected. So I can absolutely do some work into trying to figure out kind of the best counterfactual to compare to for Oregon. And then the other thing you mentioned, I believe, was like, why are all the green states in one area? There was a different map at some point that I looked at. I think a lot of the separate reporting states are kind of in the south, and so you see that in the blue. So there probably is some interconnected tax policy here, and I can do some digging to understand what that might be.
One last question. Thank you. So I want to be mindful of your time, and you should you know, work with the chair about prioritizing what I know there's a lot going on. So I guess the only thing I really need as an individual, and I don't know how the rest of the committee members feel, is that I just want to understand what are the levers, I'll use the most basic term, like what are the things I need to factor in making this decision and the ramifications of them. If there's just what's on the slide, then that's fine. But I just wanted to understand that.
Senator Taylor, I don't think we should feel, any of us feel guilty or alone in this. When I look at the state tax notes article, it says that it is important to understand the largely haphazard and convoluted state adoption of or decoupling from guilty
guilty introduced confusion into this already opaque area of state taxation. So I get the impression that all states are trying to figure out the best way to do that. And in fact, Kate, one of your policy options said do nothing and let the Department of Revenue deal with this through rules. The department is here. Would you want to weigh in on this, Deanna, on that part?
Not really.
I like this idea. It says at the end, DOR rulemaking. So they can screw it up. We can blame them later, right?
Yeah.
No, we'll try not to do that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Deanna Mack, Department of Revenue. And I think the intent of the federal legislation really was to address base erosion and profit shifting. These are controlled. This income is in the subpart F, the controlled foreign corporations part of the Internal Revenue Code. And we have been treating CFC income, subpart F income, as dividend received income since the early 1990s. So if you leave rulemaking, if you want to make a decision and you leave rulemaking to us, we have to look to other, as a basic tenet of statutory construction, we look to other areas of Oregon law to provide guidance. And so if you, that's an area we will look. I mean, we may end up finding other pieces of law, but the way that we've currently been treating it is as dividend income. And that is taxable in Oregon, and so that means that there would be a dividend received deduction. And the clarity that we need, and I think that people, the dispute in Oregon at least, is that there's a 50% deduction at the federal level, right? And so there's this whole difference between gross and net at the federal level, and then Oregon allows an 80% dividends received deduction. So do we end up with a negative 30% number on the Oregon return? Right? Is that what you guys intend? I don't know that that's the case, but clarity would be helpful. Either say it's income directly, say it's a dividend, say it's eligible for the 80% deduction, say it's eligible for just the 50% deduction, but I think clarity is needed in regards to this deduction, in this income, excuse me.
Yeah, I think there's sort of two goals. One, we want to eliminate the double deduction problem.
Right.
But then also we want to make rational policy.
Mm-hmm.
And so really, it's impossible for me at this point to see how any one of those gets us there or doesn't. I'm sure they do. But what I hear you saying is doing nothing here doesn't really help on the double deduction part.
Right. For sure on that, Mr. Chair. And I think as far as the policy, I think that around what the intent was at the federal level that I've read about is that they were trying to address the, since the 80s, since the change to Water's Edge, there's been a movement of businesses to shift their entities overseas to avoid taxation within the territory, the Water's Edge. And so that's what they call base erosion and profit shifting. And that's what our attempt was with the listed jurisdiction legislation, was to help, in very low tax districts, right? I think the guilty is not, I think it's 13.5%, I think, if it's lower than that. So it's not quite as low as we had in the listed jurisdiction components, but it's up there. It's still fairly low compared to United States taxation. I think that was kind of the idea, was to deal with base erosion and profit shifting.
Okay. Other questions for Deanna?
Yes,
Senator
Boquist. And I know you don't have it in front of you, but I'll just give you a basic idea. The cost memo on the left-hand side of it has the officers and directors. There's 22 of them. 11 of those companies have paid lobbyists in this building. And I'm just curious, because this was sort of the question back I had of staff here, since 11 of them have paid lobbyists, and you'd think if we were considering doing one thing one way or one thing another way, have you heard any real feedback from any of the major players in this arena that they seek clarity, or do they think you're going to just do a rule and it's going to go in their favor, or have you heard any major feedback from since there's so many of these entities that normally we'd be lined up in that back row back there, but they're not here.
Senator Haas, Chair Haas and Senator Boquist, I actually don't have that in front of me, and I have not memorized who those entities are, but I know, I'll take a look at it later, but we have heard from, we have a liaison group that some of the members cost, not cost actually, but the tax Oregon State Bar tax section meets with us regularly, and they represent a variety of different preparers in the Portland, you know, just around the state, different areas and different clients, and they have expressed like, is there going to be guidance? Is there going to be helpful? I don't know who they represent necessarily, but that's where I'm hearing it from, more than and obviously from Nikki Dobay, who's also representing the cost, but also the state bar tax section as well, as that part of that committee. So I hear it from different areas.
So a follow-up on that, it seems to me, the way I understood what I heard is that if we do nothing at all, we will allow the double deduction. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and Senator Riley, I believe that is correct.
So that would explain to me why nobody's coming to talk to us about doing something.
Well, I'd follow up on that. We're talking about doing something you think would be loving us not to do it, but normally
they don't think we're getting there.
Yeah, well, I just look at the list here, and I know that the former, having been closer to the chair, that we had conference calls and everything else this last time around when we were doing all this thing, and the likely suspects, which I won't name here, are the ones that, you know, made mention that, well, they didn't have any problem with guilty, and you know, that's sort of what we're asking is, are they guilty? Using the other word, and that's why I just wondered who's, I mean, you would think that there's at least two or three that we could all name right here that would be, you know, beating down our doors if we're talking about doing it. I do share the same concern that I don't think anybody's looking for anybody to get a negative 30 deduction, but.
Well, Chair Haas and Senator Boquist and Riley, I think that to the extent there's ambiguity in the law, Kate said it earlier, people will do what's best for their situation. And so if you provide that guidance, then you'll give them that surety on how they're supposed to prepare their returns.
Follow up. Okay, there's four of them up there. Do you have a number five? What's the guidance you're looking for?
The four options that Caitlin had on her, Mr. Chair and Senator Boquist, I think that we would prefer something that you do by statute.
Right.
Make a policy choice and put it in the statute rather than rely on us to write rules on this complex of an issue.
Mm-hmm. Senator Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the way I read the cost memo and this other stuff, it suggests, and I don't want it to suggest, has someone run the numbers on what would happen if we, having now reconnected, did nothing further? Do we have those numbers? No. Because that would be really helpful so we know what we're, what we have without doing a thing.
Yeah. And that was sort of my question earlier.
Right, that was. And then the second, the cost memo, them stating that there could be choices, different choices made by businesses, as you just indicated. Mm-hmm. But to me, let's pretend that they don't have those choices, and we are in a position to do what the tax note memo says, which is, while the federal government no longer trying to impose a corporate tax, the states that conform to GILTI, which I think is us, would in effect be adopting a slightly modified form of worldwide taxation. And so the question then becomes the question I asked earlier, which is why not? Why didn't Oregon do that? Who would pick up and leave as a result of Oregon now having a modified form of worldwide taxation as opposed to Water's Edge? And that would be the second question.
Okay.
Right, exactly. Okay, which is, I think I'm just repeating these guys has already made points, but anyhow, those two things would make the decision much less opaque.
I did have Jody Weiser signed up. Did you want to testify on this bill, Jody?
Chair Haas and members of the committee, Jody Weiser for Task Force Oregon. I signed up because the last time you had a hearing, there were people saying, oh, you really don't want to do Water's Edge. And of course, last February, what you did was give up a form of worldwide reporting. because we had the tax haven law. And you gave that up because we thought guilty would work. So I think it's imperative that we figure out how to make it work. And not having a double deduction would be critical to that. But part of the map difference, I think, is that there were only a handful of states that had tax haven law. And so there were only a handful of states that were doing reaching beyond water's edge. So it would be normal if you weren't reaching beyond water's edge to continue not reaching beyond water's edge. We were, and we gave it up because we thought guilty would bring revenue. So I think that's important. You asked the reputational question, and you know, we had the tax haven law, and lots of businesses were moving operations here, and we got rid of it, and lots of businesses continued to move their operations here. So I don't think this is the critical point that decisions are being made on, probably. Just, you know, I mean, we've had extremely rapid growth compared to other states, so that doesn't seem to be the critical thing. And then there's a piece in the tax expenditure report that I don't truly understand.
So, forgive me for interrupting, but before I lose my thought, the tax, let's see, the federal government's approach was to reduce its overall tax, to go back to a territorial system as opposed to a worldwide system, and thus have so many people try to hide money from bringing it back into the United States. When they drop the corporate tax level down to a level, and it's called out in this chart, and it shows pretty clearly the idea we went from the very top to the middle. The idea was that more people would bring money back, and thus we, Oregon, would piggyback on that new income that would not have otherwise been present, but for the federal's change in their structure. So in a kind of a weird way, the United States becomes territorial and Oregon becomes worldwide by virtue of this decision we haven't made yet. Is that a correct statement?
Well, it's not the way I understand it, because I believe that chart is about the one-time repatriation of money. And this is the ongoing thing, like our tax haven law was.
That's a question. I don't know.
But I truly, this is way over my grade level. And it's like, if the best minds, we do know that the building followed you last time. And so this room is responsible for what to do. And it's an awesome responsibility because it's really hard law. And, you know, I think it is an interesting question about who's not in the room and who's in the room and that sort of thing. I don't know.
Mr. Chair, okay. That is not the repatriation. That's now. That's now and forever. And that was the whole idea, was to get down out of the highest. And anyway, yeah, that's why I think we'd be piggybacking on a situation that did not previously exist, which should suggest there'd be more money coming this direction. That'd be my, because that's the whole idea, is to get away from the
right. And I think
Dutch
that if we didn't have double deduction, that was the idea of why we made the change in February. But I don't think we understood about double deduction for the pass-through. We didn't really get it about this last February, probably, and we may not get it now.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have amendments and more info coming. Thank you, Kate. Nice job today. Anything until tomorrow at 3:00. So thank you all. We will adjourn.